Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 73, Cast Iron Skillet. Saturday, March 28th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode features the following segments: The Front Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, and so forth. I'd like to give a special welcome to Abby. Abby is SAE Nerd Girl on Ravelry and took the time to introduce herself on the introductions thread. There have been some recent questions about spindles in personal messages and on the blog. And I'd like to announce that the next episode, episode 74, will be devoted to some chat about spindles, spindling, and fiber to use for spindling. And there will also be a very special giveaway announced on that episode, so you don't want to miss it. If you have questions about spindles and spindling, especially if you are a beginner, I hope that you will post them or send me a personal message so that I can include a response to them on episode 74. There is a Think Green contest going on right now on the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry. The winner will be selected when the group reaches 400 members, and it's currently at 391 members. 9 to go. I very much hope to draw the winner for 2 skeins of beautiful yarn that was donated by a listener. I hope to draw for that on the next podcast episode. So if you've been listening to the podcast and you have not yet joined the group as a member, please do that. If you've been enjoying the podcast, maybe you'd like to recommend it to a friend on Ravelry so they can join. It's hard to believe that it's the end of March. My spring break is coming up this coming week, and there's still snow in patches on the ground and in the woods. And there are actually flurries in the forecast for this afternoon. It is sunny, but it is quite cold. Eventually, there will be some springtime weather, I know, and I'm really aching to clean my porch and set up the furniture out there and just sweep away all the doldrums of winter. But for now, since it isn't balmy out yet, I am planning to use spring break to get work done on several projects, and I'll be talking about some of those in the episode segments coming up. The Front Porch. As I mentioned in the last episode, I did begin a Flickerl. This is an asymmetrical scarf shawl pattern by Simone Eich of Woolwork Designs. It features the linen stitch and is a fantastic project for using up scraps of yarn and experimenting with color. I cast this on before leaving for an overnight field trip because I anticipated a lot of bus knitting and a lot of sitting in classrooms and auditoriums watching students engage in the legislative process sort of knitting. It's an excellent pattern for this kind of a thing. And it's just so much fun to knit and to use up scraps this way. So I really can't recommend the pattern enough. This is my second time working on the pattern. And I think it could become an annual event to save up scraps of yarn all year and then use them up in this project. I think the project works best for solid or semi-solid colors. It's not the thing for crazy patterns or self-striping, to my mind, because the whole point of the pattern is to be able to see the beauty of the linen stitch. And that really comes through if you're changing colors every four rows. One of the great things about using scraps for this pattern is that the ends are not woven in. They form a fringe along one side of the scarf. It's just fantastic. And I'm using light worsted DK sport and thick, substantial sock yarns all together in this pattern with the same size needles. I think I'm using US size 6 needles for this. So if you're looking for a way to use your scraps that isn't a sock yarn blanket, I don't know if I could ever have patience for one of those. They look like they're fun to have, but I don't know that I would have fun knitting one. Never say never, I suppose, is the rule. This is really good for me right now as a way to use yarn scraps. So check it out if you haven't already. And Simone's other patterns, many of them asymmetrical, many of them really conceived with hand-spun yarn in mind. She told me in an email conversation that when she designs, a lot of the time she has beautiful hand-spun yarns in mind and enjoys it so much when she sees on Ravelry that hand spinners are using her patterns and working their beautiful yarn into her designs. So check out Simone Eich of Woolwork Designs. And the specific name of this pattern is Flickerl, which is flicker with an L at the end. And it's a free pattern available on Ravelry. Also on the front porch, I have been working on it just before setting up for recording today, is that I am knitting the final version of a small amulet made out of hand-processed, hand-spun yarn for my sheep to shawl class. The assignment is to knit a small bag or pouch from hand-spun. And I have decided on an amulet type pouch. It's something that can be worn around the neck. The design and the name for this project have emerged and made work on this pattern a lot, I guess, a lot more energized, because I'm drawing on some passages from the novel Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson as an inspiration for this work. I just pictured the narrator, Ruth, as having something of this sort around her neck or on her person to capture treasured objects and hold them near to her. She seems like the kind of character who would do that. There's no specific reference in the work that I can find of her actually having one, so it's something that I imagine. But she is a transient. It's very clear that she's a drifter by the end of the novel, and that she's writing the novel from the perspective of having been many years a drifter. So I think it's fitting. And it's really, like I said, it's really fueled my work on this homework that I've had. So one of the things I plan to do this week is to knit a final version of the pattern where I'm actually measuring the yardage of the hand spun that I'm using. To type up the pattern, I have it scrawled out, but I just want to check it as I go and to photograph my process so that I can put everything together into a pattern package. I'm very excited about this. I have released one pattern in the past, so I'm hopeful that the learning curve is not quite as steep this time with a much smaller project and something a little more specific and finite. And having spring break to do it seems like a really cool thing. So hopefully next week I'll be able to give you more information on the release of that pattern. Ever-expanding skill set. Since the last episode, I've been experimenting with a new dish for my cast iron skillet. I have 3 cast iron skillets and love them. I'm not a stickler for how I care for them. I think they're much more forgiving than folks may have you believe. When mine seem to become a little less nonstick or a little sandy in their surface, my technique is just to pour in some coarse salt and some olive oil and really give that a scrub. And then I try to just cook bacon and high fat foods in it for the first few times that I use it. And usually it's right back in shape again. I have a workhorse cast iron skillet that I use for every day. And I have another one without sides that I use for making pancakes and French toast. And I have a third that I rarely use. The only distinction for that one is that I never put garlic in it, and often I will use it to saute a piece of fish if I want just a very light, delicate flavor without any garlic. I use that third cast iron skillet. Since Yarns at Yinhu listeners have been exploring tools for the Power Pantry cook-along in March, I thought it would be interesting to try a new dish in an old favorite tool, my cast iron skillet. I rely on it. I cook in it several times a week, if not every day. For Christmas, my sister Laura gave me the new cast iron skillet cookbook. It's by Ellen Brown, and it is a fantastic resource. If you've been cooking with cast iron for a while, or if you are new and just thinking about maybe giving up some of your Teflon and trying a cast iron skillet, or if, joy of joys, you receive one from a relative that's already been broken in, you definitely want to take a look at this book, and I think you'll want to purchase it. It begins with some history of cast iron, particularly cast iron in the United States, and the author talks about how cast iron is kind of becoming modern and hip again. She talks about health and environmental benefits of using cast iron and its incredible versatility. I really like it because you can do a sear on something like a piece of meat and then put it directly in the oven. And I would not do that with any of my other cookware. So the versatility is fantastic. The recipe book or cookbook has recipes from everything from appetizers, breads, entrees to desserts. And I decided to try a dish called Country Captain. Even though I make a number of curry dishes, I had not encountered this one and I had never heard of Country Captain. The country in the name refers to India, and it's a stewed chicken dish. Chicken stewed with spices, lots of onion and garlic, and also tomatoes, and served frequently over rice. So it's a kind of early fusion dish. The captain part of the name is to represent sea captains who are supposed to have brought the dish from India to East Coast seaports in the United States. There's some dispute over how the dish originated, but I like the story of that one. And to add to the fusion element, this dish is often served over Carolina rice, which is a staple in the South. I like the way the cooking of this dish happens all in the same cast iron skillet. So you start by browning the chicken, and then you remove that to a plate. You add the onions and garlic, vegetables, and saute them. And then by the time you're finished cooking the dish, everything is added back in and simmering all together. I enjoy toasting any spices before I use them, and the cast iron skillet is ideal for toasting spices. So you just make some room in the pan, depending on what you're sauteing. You just shift it to the side, and right in the middle, in a little bit of butter or oil, or just in the dry pan, you can sprinkle your spices and get them a little warm and toasty before you start mixing them into the other ingredients. Oh, your kitchen smells fantastic when you do that as well. I couldn't believe that I didn't have some of the ingredients called for in the dish. I didn't have currants, so I used diced golden raisins instead. I decided to use grape tomatoes, fresh tomatoes, rather than canned tomatoes called for in the dish, because I had them on hand for another recipe that I thought I would be making for a crowd, and the event was canceled, so I was trying to find ways to use that up. So I just sliced grape tomatoes, or I guess cherry tomatoes, in half and used them in the dish. I used white wine instead of sherry. I rarely have sherry on hand. And I didn't have rice. I had rice for risotto. I didn't have regular rice. So I served this over orzo for yet another element of fusion. And it was really good. It's a delightful dish. It's even better as leftovers than it is the first day you make it. And I think it's a perfect thing to make ahead, or to make a very large portion and freeze smaller bits of it so that you can thaw it out and use it later. And that's something I'd like to address in a future episode, or maybe a future month of the hashtag Power Pantry Exploration, is using your freezer more to extend your effectiveness in the kitchen. I think that would be a great topic, and I think that there are quite a few listeners who are doing innovative things with their freezers and refrigerators to save money and save time. I have been reading the Ravelry threads for March and the great conversation about tools, and I'd like to reference in closure something contributed by Stacks. She mentioned hands being the best of all kitchen tools, and I couldn't agree more, and I'm so glad that she mentioned it, because I think a lot of times when searching for a particular tool to do the job, I often come to the realization that my hands are really the best tools. And in the same way that knitters and spinners really enjoy engaging with the yarn and the fiber that they're working with, I think really engaging and touching and working with your food does provide a level of nourishment and satisfaction that you can't get in any other way. So yes, Stacks, I agree. In many cases, hands really are our best tools. In April, we will be exploring condiments. I'll be talking about it in the podcast episodes, and there will be great conversation in the threads on Ravelry. I'm curious about condiments, not just the typical kinds of condiment like you put ketchup on a hamburger. I'm curious about condiments that you cook with. that are really a part of your pantry and the ingredients you use while cooking. And I'm also curious about condiments that you make rather than purchase ready-made. There's just a dizzying array of condiments available these days. I think some are very difficult maybe to replicate in your own kitchen, but there are many more that are easy to do. Are you doing that? Do you have recipes? Have you made commitments? I'd really like to hear your comments and suggestions. And I plan to explore this a little bit on my own. And so forth. With the week off, I really need to return to my sewing project. I put it aside for a while because I met with quite a bit of frustration. It was probably a really big leap for me to think that I could draft a pattern for my own skirt and that it would look good on, because it didn't. And in part, I blame British television. I had watched some episodes of The Sewing Bee, the Great British Sewing Bee. And in one of the episodes, someone did French seams inside of this darling little child's dress. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be great if I encased the seams on the side of my skirt? It will give it a more finished look. That's such a good idea. Well, it really added some bulk to the sides of the skirt, which is the exact place where I didn't want any extra bulk or weight. And then the way that I cut the pattern for the skirt, it sort of jutted out in the hip area in a really disastrous way. All of this I discovered after I had machine basted each of those strip pieced feathers that I made that would be appliqued onto the skirt. But the first step is that you machine baste them onto the front and the back of the skirt. Then you sew the skirt together. So when I decided this was a complete disaster that I didn't feel that I could rectify, I had to use a seam ripper to take off every one of those feathers so I could salvage them. So after doing that, I really needed to step away from the project for a while and rethink it. After having some conversations with my mom, I agreed with her that it would be best to start with a skirt that I actually had a pattern for and I wasn't making the pattern. And she said that while a skirt with two seams, one down each side, may seem very easy, it's very difficult to get it done well and in a flattering way. Which I really didn't want to agree with, because I wanted to feel that I wanted it to be like cutting on the bias would make it okay and this would solve all the problems, but it didn't. So I decided to resort to a pattern I have with a pattern writer who I've had good experiences. So I need to return to the positive. And when I started sewing over the winter holidays and I was brand new to everything, I made several Heather Ross projects that worked out really well. They were simple and they worked well. So I have decided to sew the yard sale wrap skirt in the same fabric that I had been using for the bias cut skirt, and to find a way to put the applique feathers onto the wrap skirt. I think it will be attractive. I think it will be very similar to what I was going after in the first place. And I like the idea of having a pattern and piecing together the skirt. and that it's adjustable because it's tied. I think a wrap skirt like this one will be something that I could do in maybe a couple different kinds of fabric and just wear it all summer. I like to wear skirts while working outside. A long skirt, I think, is much more comfortable than a pair of shorts. So much more comfortable. So I tend to be pretty hard on my skirts and to wear them in situations where, you know, many people might think jeans or shorts would be more appropriate. I prefer a skirt. So with the week ahead of me, I'm very optimistic. And I've also arranged some time to spend with my mom so that she can oversee my work on this project a little bit and maybe keep me away from some of the snags I encountered last time. I'll be sure to let you know about it in an upcoming episode, or maybe even some photos on Instagram, and you'll know whether it's going well or not going well.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Kurt sings, a bird out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you like what you heard in today's episode, I hope you will consider joining the Yarns at Yanhu group on Ravelry, liking the show's Facebook page, or hopping over to iTunes to leave a star rating or a review. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.